Welcome to the official UEFA Champions League podcast and our new mini-series, Classic Matches. We're reliving some of the competition's greatest games, and this week we have two absolute crackers.
Andy Cole, a game sealer. 7 minutes to play. A look at the watch, and Alec Ferguson knows that surely now Manchester United have done enough.
As well as Manchester United's 1999 comeback win at Juventus, we'll be discussing a semi-final showdown that went all the way.
What a pressure penalty for Bastian Schweinsteiger. He's done it! There's no place like home for Bayern. They will be the first team to contest a Champions League final at their own stadium.
Bayern's dramatic 2012 win over Real Madrid, and much more to come on UEFA Champions League Classic Matches. Chris Parrott and myself, Rob Daly, are here to discuss two iconic games. Chris, I think this is going to be a lot of fun. Why have we picked out these two in particular?
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Of course, there's no European football, is there, right now, sadly, but every Tuesday and Wednesday, Rob, you can get your Champions League fix, because on UEFA.tv, that's UEFA's OTT video platform, they're streaming reruns of two classic matches every week as live. And this week, it's all about these two epic semi-finals. So on Tuesday, the 12th of May, you can watch Real Madrid against Bayern from 5 p.m. CET. You'll need a couple of hours for that, given how long the game went and how dramatic it was. And then on Wednesday, the 13th of May, it is Juventus against Manchester United. Fans simply need to go to www.uefa.tv or download the UEFA TV app on the Apple and Play stores and simply log in or register for free to watch.
Yeah, I use the UEFA.tv app to watch Liverpool Dortmund from the UEFA Europa League, that Klopp comeback win against Thomas Tuchel's Dortmund, and it was brilliant fun. And obviously we're all missing live football right now, but hopefully these reruns of games, plus this podcast, help guide you through them and give the stories as a suitable substitute. So we'll start the show, Chris. How about we do Juve United first? So we're going back 21 years to that semi-final second leg. I think it's probably worth setting the scene before kickoff in Turin.
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, it's more than two decades ago, but ask any Manchester United fan of their great European memories, and many of them will pick this game, Rob. Juve were the golden team of European football at the time, we have to remember. They were hoping to reach a fourth Champions League final in a row, which is unprecedented.
Yeah.
United, meanwhile, you know, we think of them as giants now in the Sir Alex Ferguson era, but they were in the semi-finals for just the second time since the 1960s, and it was more than 30 years since they'd reached a final. So it was a huge night for them. United were chasing a treble, remember, in 1999, but they only salvaged a draw in the first leg at Old Trafford. Ryan Giggs scored in added time, almost the last kick, actually, to draw 1-1. And it meant they were big underdogs going to Turin. Giggs was injured, which was a major blow for them. But you just have to look through the teams, Rob. So many great players involved. The goalkeepers, Schmeichel and Peruzzi. Keenan Davids in midfield. Beckham and Zidane as well. You know, you're talking a who's who of the greatest players of their times. And the two coaches, not bad as well. Sir Alex Ferguson and Carlo Ancelotti.
Yeah, pretty elite overall. Okay, so the Stadio delle Alpi was packed, of course. Here's a reminder of how the action unfolded.
Conte with Butt, taken short by Zidane. Oh, it's been put in by Inzaghi. It's the perfect start for Juve. Inzaghi, oh, it's deflected and deflected in. Inzaghi with 2 in 5 minutes for Juve. It's Keane. Manchester United back in this. Suddenly the complexion changes. Cole. Oh, they're level. Dwight York with the header. From 2-0 down to 2-2. Two goals in the space of 10 minutes for Manchester United. Oh, and that's a gift. And it is a gift. Andy Cole, a game sealer. 7 minutes to play. A look at the watch, and Alec Ferguson knows that surely now Manchester United have done enough.
Well, of course, that last goal did effectively kill the tie. And a reminder, you can rewatch the game in full at 5 p.m. CET on UEFA.tv on Wednesday the 12th of May. Well worth doing. Chris, we're going to hear from key figures from that game, but let's set some of the immediate pre-match tone, because there was clearly a fear amongst Manchester United of having to face Juve again.
Yeah, there was. I'll give you a quote from Gary Neville after the quarterfinal when United beat another Italian team, Inter, over two legs. He said, "Have Juve qualified?" And looked pretty sick to his stomach, because this was the third year in a row that Manchester United and Juventus had met in the Champions League. And in all honesty, in the previous 2 years, bar one game, I think, at Old Trafford, Juve had schooled Manchester United. And we can hear from Sir Alex Ferguson now, because for him at that time, Juventus were very much the benchmark that he wanted his Manchester United team to reach.
The learning block was Juventus, absolutely. When we played Juventus the first time, they had that great team of theirs, you know, the fantastic players. And we went over there and they beat us 1-0. And we had a throw-in in the corner flag of their penalty box. And for some reason, Gary Pallister made a run forward for this long throw-in from Gary Neville, and left Nicky at the back with Busic, who could run. The ball got cleared and Busic just went by Nicky Butt, 1-0. And that was a fantastic, but they were a great side. They came to Old Trafford, beat us again. Del Piero was fantastic. And then in the following year, we got them again. But this time we were winning bit by bit. And we beat them at home, but lost away again.
So that's Ferguson there, Rob. Very candid. And actually, if you look at where Juve were at that time and where Manchester United were, it's no surprise. United, if you go back through the history of the competition, won it in 1968, the first English team to do that. But after that, they hadn't really reached the semi-finals until a couple of years before this game, whereas Juve had been regulars at the back end of the Champions League and the European Cup. United really hadn't. So this match wasn't quite a changing of the guard, but certainly Manchester United's, I think, went up a couple of levels in terms of the European game this night in Turin.
Yeah, so Juve, of course, won it in 96, were runners-up in 97 and 98, and it had actually been 14 years since an English club had reached the semi-finals of the European Cup, the Champions League. I mean, no Ryan Giggs, who got the goal in the first leg, Chris, that was a big blow. Yes, but Blomqvist played on the left-hand side, and I suppose that start for United, I mean, because we've both watched back the game now in preparation for this, it was a really poor start. Yap Stam, in particular, had a bit of a nightmare against Filippo Inzaghi, who got the two early goals. The deflection, of course, off Stam for the second. He nearly let him have a hat-trick in that first half. And we think of Yap Stam as so imperious, such a phenomenal defender, who actually had an off day on a day that United needed him. They were pretty typical Inzaghi's sort of goals, weren't they?
They were. And I think United sort of switched off for the corner for the first as well. Zidane played it short to Di Livio. I think it was Gary Neville who was the wrong side of Inzaghi. He almost tried to rugby tackle him, but Pippo Inzaghi doesn't miss from a couple of metres out. He made a career of finishes like that. And really, after 11 minutes, given all we've heard from Ferguson there, the history, the Juve team they had, they were 2-0 up, and you thought, surely no chance. Even for this United team, who, as I mentioned, were looking to win three trophies in 1999. And of course, you mentioned Giggs. Manchester United fans will fondly remember his FA Cup semi-final goal against Arsenal.
Yeah.
Well, this match was about a week later, and he'd gone from that moment there, one of the great goals in English football, to being injured for a huge European evening.
I think the midfield battle in general in this game, Chris, was so interesting, because if we think back to the first leg in Manchester, Juve were dominant in the middle of the park. They had Antonio Conte, the captain, of course, now the head coach at Inter. Then they had Edgar Davids and Zidane in a sort of three, Zidane playing just off the striker, and they completely ran rings around Manchester United that day. And I suppose that takes us nicely to the man who helped turn this tie around, because at this point, let's not forget, United are 3-1 down on aggregate. They're away from home. They're probably not banking on progressing at this stage. And then Roy Keane, not known for his goal scoring, Chris, comes up with a big moment that really sparks a legendary performance.
It's the night that he became a Manchester United legend, and they still, I'm lucky enough to go to Old Trafford a lot, and they still talk about Keane this evening as being the one when he really stamped his authority all over the club, really. 24 minutes in, as you mentioned, David Beckham corner, fantastic header for a man who scored roughly one goal every 10 United appearances in his career. Not a bad time to come up with that moment. But then 8 minutes later, Rob, his night turned sour, really.
Blomqvist getting his chance because of the injury to Ryan Giggs. It's wild from Keane. And that's a yellow card for Roy Keane. It means that should Manchester United progress, Roy Keane will be unavailable for the final.
Well, I think when you, as I said, when we back against the wall in many respects, you look for a leader in the team to really respond. And even though that we have a quality team throughout, in that particular game and that particular night, Roy Keane stepped up and showed what a quality, not just a player he was, and I'm certainly a leader in itself as a captain. We needed some sort of inspiration, and who better to have done that? And Roy Keane proved why he's such a great player.
So that was Dwight York there, who had a pretty good night himself. But I think you heard his words there, how important Roy Keane was after the yellow card. And there's a few really interesting things here. One, from an English point of view, is if you remember in the World Cup in 1990, in the same stadium, in a semi-final, Paul Gascoigne picked up a yellow card. Knew he was going to miss the World Cup final if they got there, and his performance dropped. Roy Keane went the other way in the Stadio delle Alpi. He was immense after that. And there's two quotes, I think, which sum it up perfectly. One from Wes Brown, Rob, who said he went into this Terminator role after picking up the booking. And from Sir Alex Ferguson, who's won everything in terms of longevity, has maybe managed more games than almost any other coach as well. It was the most emphatic display of selflessness I've ever seen on a football field. Extraordinary. It was an amazing performance from Keane after picking up the yellow card.
Yeah, and I mean, also from a quite practical standpoint, I think it was also a moment that signified the importance of Zinedine Zidane, because you see Jesper Blomqvist, and he has a go at Blomqvist after he gives him a sort of not the best of passes. And Zidane is about to he's on the halfway line. Zidane is still relatively far from goal, but they even saw from the first leg his ability to ping a diagonal round the back of them caused real problems. And I think there was probably a bit of Keane in that moment who thought, I cannot let him play a ball over the top, because if he does something brilliant and they score again, we're done. And another thing that I didn't really remember from the time, I think there were 12 players going into that second leg who were a yellow from suspension.
Yes.
12 players across the two teams, including Zidane, including Conte and Deschamps, and of course Paul Scholes, who came off the bench. Pretty bad challenge, actually, on Didier Deschamps that picked him up a yellow card, and that subsequently meant he missed the final. Dwight York, we heard there, Chris, as well. I think it's a nice moment to come to him. And a really well-taken goal. What a lovely combination between him and Andy Cole to make the equaliser.
Yeah, and the great thing about this was, Rob, that it started with a ball, and I'd urge people to watch this on UEFA.tv. It started with a ball, a fairly long ball, down the right-hand side, of which David Beckham nods it back to Andy Cole, who crosses in. Great ball for York to score. And if you think of this United team, it was 4-4-2. It should have been Cole heading it back to Beckham, who crossed it in for York. But Andy Cole suddenly turned into David Beckham in a second. And it was a good finish. And they just had, when you think of great striking partnerships, I think Cole and York, certainly in Manchester United's history, are right up there. They just seem to have this telepathic relationship on the pitch. And we can hear a bit more from Dwight York now. And given what he says in this clip, it's pretty easy to understand why they had that immense partnership on the pitch.
I think what people didn't realise, that myself and Andy had become really good mates off the football pitch. There was a lot of speculation of Andy leaving the club when I joined the club at a particular time. And when I joined the club, Andy took time out, invited me to his family home, showed me around the area, showed me the places to go, where not to go, where to shop. And I find, for someone who was sort of linked with leaving the club, went out of his way to show me the way. And that certainly enabled us to strike up a partnership when that opportunity came along.
Dwight York there, who got the equaliser, of course, for 2-2 and played his part in the third goal, Chris. York would hit the post. Dennis Irwin hit the post as the game started to unfold. Juve made a double change at half-time to try and swing the momentum back in their favour, because obviously it was such a devastating blow to have conceded those two goals prior to half-time to Manchester United. But ultimately, we know how this story ended, and there would be a third United goal and a bit of a weird one, a really weird goal to finish it off.
Yeah, it was. So one of the Juve players that came on at half-time was Paolo Montero, who was probably their leading centre-back at the time and wasn't fit enough to start the game. So Montero being out for Juve was a blow. And I don't think he was 100% fit when you watch it back. Or he certainly wasn't at the peak of his powers like we'd seen for a couple of years. And actually, York, I mean, this is all about United though, Rob, okay? So they were ahead in the tie, but not by much. But they kept two up front. They kept York and Cole up front. And Sir Alex Ferguson has often in the past talked about how they would gamble in the last 15, 20 minutes of games. And that's why they scored so many late goals, which they did. And, you know, a lot of teams, I think, would have sat back. But it was a booming clearance from Schmeichel. Went, you know, halfway to Milan, the clearance, in all honesty. And then York's sort of slaloms past both centre-backs and gets round Peruzzi, who brings him down, probably would have been a penalty. And Andy Cole's there to mop up and score probably the easiest goal of his career.
Quite funny that United then had another two strikers in the bank to win them the final. But we won't get onto that just now. Looking at the magnitude of this comeback, because bearing in mind, you know, United weren't actually that used to this stage at this level of Sir Alex Ferguson's coaching career as Manchester United manager. 3-1 down on aggregate. It's amazing when you hear Sir Alex Ferguson talk about how he and his coaching staff really felt they were still in it at that point.
And I turned to Steve McClan and I says, the next goal's the decider. And Steve McClan says, that's exactly what I was going to say to you. The next goal's the decider. We scored the next goal and they got nervous. We won 3-2. That was a great turnover from Manchester United.
Chris, I think it's probably worth painting at this point. And you obviously are around Manchester United, cover the team a lot currently. How significant was that moment? How big a moment was that historically to get to that final?
Enormous. I think in the Champions League era, it is one of the most important. You know, Manchester United had lifted the trophy in the 60s. They became the first English team to do so. But, you know, after that, it didn't quite fade from view in terms of European football. They won the Cup Winners' Cup. But they had seen their great rivals Liverpool win it numerous occasions. They had seen Nottingham Forest and Aston Villa pick up the trophy. And really, they hadn't been that close to the final until a couple of years before. And I think this was the moment they took the next step in their adventure under Sir Alex Ferguson. It had been building ever since he joined from Aberdeen. But I think he's admitted as well, they needed a moment. They needed a standout victory. And this, not just because it was Juventus, the great Juventus team, but because they were 2-0 down, I think this was the game that they announced themselves truly as a European force again. And of course, we know what happened when they went to Barcelona for the showpiece.
Yeah, and obviously for Juve, off the back of two final losses, having won the competition in the mid-90s, this was a devastating defeat to take.
Finale, un sogno che aveva cullato anche perché poteva ritornare a giocare proprio.
È finita.
Avevano segnalato due minuti, è finita dunque con il successo del Manchester United. Vedete sorridente Alex Ferguson, mentre i giocatori del Manchester United vanno a salutare i loro tifosi.
Well, to look back at this from the Bianconeri perspective, UEFA.com's Italian football correspondent Paolo Minacucci joined us now. Paolo, great to have you on the show. First of all, can you start off by translating some of that Italian commentary? I don't speak Italian, but they did sound disappointed.
Hello, everybody. Yes, it was a disappointed comment. It was a dream is over. The dream to play a fourth Champions League final in a row is over. The comment is there were a couple of players who were not fit enough to have a good performance. He's probably referring to Zidane, who was in doubt for the game, and Montero, who could only start from the bench because he received a knock in the first leg. And then he's saying, like, Luca Ancelotti stunned while Ferguson is all smiles. United players celebrate with the fans. And Juventus went close, but 10 minutes of great football were not enough. But yes, it was a big disappointment for Juve, absolutely.
Paolo, me and Chris have talked about our memories of the game, and we've both rewatched it since. What are your memories of that second leg tie?
I remember that Juve was in the middle of a turbulent season, to say the least. In January, Marcello Lippi had announced that he was joining Inter at the end of the season. Juve reacted by firing him and appointing Ancelotti in his place. The fans didn't really like the decision because Ancelotti's past as a player with teams like Milan and Roma, Juventus rivals. And Bianconeri also had lost Alessandro Del Piero for almost the entire season with an injury. Still, Italian teams had dominated European football in the 90s, and Juve had reached the final in the previous three seasons. They had an incredible midfield with the likes of Edgar Davids, Didier Deschamps, Antonio Conte, and most of all Zidane, who was arguably the greatest player on the planet in that period. And they played really well at Old Trafford in the first leg, at least for an hour. So they were clearly favourite ahead of the return leg in Turin. The first 10 minutes probably made it look easy. It wasn't. It wasn't because that United side was very, very strong. Roy Keane said that it was crucial for United, especially because Juve lost that confidence that they had in the first minutes. They almost understood what was coming. They lost the confidence and the feeling of being stronger than United after that goal completely.
Paolo, we talk now about Juventus and the Champions League as almost an obsession because they haven't won it since the mid-90s. Where did the competition rank, do you think, on this night? Was this the be-all and end-all for this season for Juve as well?
That season, Juve were not contender in Serie A. They finished seventh, level on points with Udinese. They were also eliminated in the Coppa Italia by Bologna. It was not a great season for Juve, that one. But those two final defeats were clearly in the mind of Juventus. The Champions League was the biggest target, and that elimination in the semifinals was a huge blow for them. I don't think it was the season when they had the best chance to win it. I think in 1997, when they won 6-2 against Ajax on aggregate in the semifinals, and then they lost the final against Dortmund 3-1. I don't remember another final with one team so favorite ahead of the game, and they lost it. They lost 7 finals out of 9 in a European Cup or Champions League. I don't think that year Juventus was the best Juventus of that era. With two previous seasons, probably Juventus were stronger. But yes, that defeat against United was the end of a winning period that probably convinced Juventus to react and refresh the team a bit a couple of seasons later, so when they sold Zidane and they started to sign players like Buffon and Nedved and change completely the team.
Some of the headlines in the Italian press at the time, Paolo, read things like unbelievable disaster and insane. Can you remember the immediate sort of aftermath, the feeling in Italy, especially given the fact that Juventus were in a commanding position at one point in that second leg?
Yeah, it was a very big headline, but most of all they were focusing on the end of the era because it was clearly the sign that that Juventus needed to change something because, yes, disappointed. The first 10 minutes, I was among the people that thought it was, okay, this is going to be easy for Juve. Like United scoring a late equalizer in the first leg, and now 2-0 up and after 10 minutes, they're going to cruise to the final. And then suddenly everything changed. Like the players lost confidence, set back too much, and United players were like winning every single duel. Also, we must stress that United side was really good. Like every player was good. Like I remember a performance of Roy Keane in that game was absolutely amazing. Like a leader, complete leader in the team on the pitch, and completely dominating midfield and pushing his teammates for the entire 90 minutes. It was not only that goal that changed the game, but his performance was incredible, I think.
And just finally, Paolo, you mentioned a kind of changing of the guard after this match. Zidane, of course, never won the Champions League at Juventus. He's gone on to have a sensational career in the competition with Real Madrid as a player and a coach. But is there sadness even to this day amongst Juventus fans that such a great player never lifted the trophy for the Bianconeri?
Yeah, yeah. I think that Juventus were European reigning champions when they signed Zidane. And obviously they hoped to add more European silver with him. He was, in that period, Zidane was... in my opinion, the best player in the world. So it looked like a path, like continue to dominate Europe with Zidane. And it didn't happen. It happened because they lost two finals in which they were favorites. One against Real Madrid, 1-0, and one against Dortmund, 3-1. In both times, they were clear favorites and they were disappointing in the final. I don't see this defeat against United as bad as those defeat in the previous finals, because United were an emerging side that were good and strong in every part of the pitch. Like despite those 10 minutes, Juventus were not considered as clear favorite like they were in the two previous finals. The best days of the team were over and they needed to refresh.
Paolo, thank you so much for your company today. UEFA.com's Italian football correspondent Paolo Menicucci there. Well, United's win in Turin wasn't the only amazing game in the 98-99 season. Keep an eye on the Champions League's official social media channels over the coming days for some other great goals, assists and moments from a terrific campaign. Next, we fast forward to 2012 and another dramatic semi-final on the UEFA Champions League podcast Classic Matches. Okay, next we go to a meeting of another two of Europe's most successful sides, hailing from Madrid and Munich this time. It's April 2012 and Bayern travelled to the Bernabeu with a 2-1 lead, Chris, over Jose Mourinho's Real Madrid.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's not forget, though, Bayern, their boss was Jupp Heynckes at the time, who was returning to Real Madrid, where he had won the Champions League back in 1998, one of many subplots. The first leg was dramatic in Bavaria. Franck Ribéry put Bayern ahead. That was cancelled out by Mesut Ozil's equaliser. A German international, of course, playing for Real Madrid. Real Madrid looked like hanging on for a draw, but then with almost the last kick, really, Mario Gomez scored. Jose Mourinho was very unhappy about the defending. So Bayern had a 2-1 lead to take to the Bernabeu, where they had lost to Jose Mourinho's Inter back in the 2010 final. So yeah. I'm trying to build this game up. I don't think I need to. It was so many narratives going on. And I'll just add one final one, Rob, because in the first leg, Cristiano Ronaldo was uncharacteristically quiet.
Well, he was at the heart of the drama, Chris, in the second leg. Jupp Heynckes set the scene perfectly beforehand, saying, "We will witness the creme de la creme of football games in terms of tradition. Both teams are fantastic, and for that reason, it will be very even." He wasn't wrong.
Marcelo has got it out towards Di Maria. Now is that handball? It was penalty! Handball by Alaba and an early penalty to Real Madrid. A yellow card for Alaba, which would rule him out of the final. And guess who is going to take it? Cristiano Ronaldo. Oh, made it look so easy, like he's having a kickabout in the park. It's a Champions League semi-final and he just stroked it into the corner. Khedira. Oh, here's Ronaldo! He's done it again! What a finish! A blistering start for Real Madrid. 2-0 up within a quarter of an hour. Ronaldo has them both. And now Bayern have to get an away goal just to level the tie. The tempo of the game is phenomenal. Robin again, he's got it through to Gomez. On for Kroos. Oh, down goes Gomez, penalty! And another twist in this thrilling semi-final. The responsibility falls to Arjen Robin. Can he level the tie? Oh, he can! Casillas got hands to it, but could not prevent it from going into the net. It's the precious away goal for Bayern Munich. And it's 3-3 on aggregate. The tie is completely all square. And what a semi-final we have on our hands here.
Okay, so all that drama had unfolded by the 27th minute, Chris, which is a bit ridiculous. So now it's at 3-3, going to extra time as things stand after the two for Ronaldo and the Robin penalty. Back at the Bernabeu, of course, former Real Madrid player. This was, I mean, you know, we set it up with the Jupp Heynckes quote beforehand. The game was blistering and the level of play involved was absurd.
It was. Mourinho pre-match, Rob, who is always good for a quote, let's be honest. "It's excitements of games like this that turns my hair grey." And after that opening 30 minutes, I don't know what he was thinking. It was, the pace was relentless. It really could have been 4-4 at half time. There were 17 attempts for both sides in the first half. It was electric attacking football, really. And if you'd said at 30 minutes that it would finish 2-1 at full time, no one would have believed you. If you'd said it would then finish 2-1 at the end of extra time, people probably would have turned away and thought he's got no idea what he's talking about.
Well, let's set the scene a little bit and go through the teams very quickly. Madrid's team was Casillas in goal there, Pepe and Ramos at centre-back, Arbeloa right-back, Marcelo left-back, then they had Khedira and Lonzo in the middle, and then Di Maria, Ozil, Ronaldo and Benzema in attack for Bayern. And you can see how this became the team that would then go on to dominate in Germany for the next sort of 7 years anyway. The real building of it with Neuer in goal, the back four of Lahm, Boateng, Badstuber and Alaba. Then holding in midfield, they had Schweinsteiger, who of course was decisive in the tie ultimately, Luis Gustavo alongside him. Then on the right wing, taking up number 10 was Arjen Robben. Toni Kroos playing in behind Mario Gomez. Of course, Kroos would end up at Real Madrid. And then Ribery on the other side. Elite players involved, Chris. We'd also been in a situation whereby sort of 48 hours earlier, there was a chance of an all Clasico final. They've been talking about whether Barcelona would progress, ultimately didn't, losing to Chelsea. So this was a real chance for Real Madrid to have the blockbuster season, given how well they were doing domestically as well.
Yeah, they'd won the title. They'd wrestled the initiative back from Barcelona. The great Barca team under Pep Guardiola, this was, of course. By the way, as we'll come on to in a moment, Leo Messi missed a penalty the night before on the Tuesday. Cristiano Ronaldo, as we'll hear in a moment, would miss a decisive penalty as well. So that was quite a thing in the space of 24 hours. But, you know, Real Madrid, this was Jose Mourinho's second season. They were getting better and better. Bayern as well, I think, had a big point to prove. They had a home final, remember. The 2012 final was in Munich. So for the whole campaign, the build-up, you know, can they reach a home final? Can they be the first team in the Champions League era to do that? The pressure was enormous. Also, in between the first leg and the second leg, Borussia Dortmund had wrapped up the Bundesliga title for the second year in a row. So it was Champions League or bust, really. They did have a cup final, which Bayern would lose as well to Dortmund. But really, it was Champions League or bust for the Bavarian Giants ahead of this semi-final second leg.
Yeah, they'd finished the third the season before. So when Bayern, and then given the Champions League placings, they had to come through the playoff round to eventually reach this semi-final. And of course, underlying all of this, Chris, was the objective to reach a final in their own stadium to play at the Fußball Arena München and to take on Chelsea. So it did go all the way to penalties after numerous chances for both sides on the night. Here's how matters concluded in Madrid.
So, Bayern Munich to take the first penalty, David Alaba, 19 years of age, and he puts it away to give Bayern the advantage. First up for Real, no surprise, Cristiano Ronaldo. Oh, saved by Neuer! Can you believe it? Mario Gomez steps up for Bayern. No problem. 2-0 to Bayern. Now the pressure is on Kaká. Oh, it's saved again! Phenomenal from Neuer. Kroos against Casillas. Oh, this time Casillas saves! Just what Real needed. And that was a fine stop. Xabi Alonso comes forward. Can he get Real on the board? Yes, he can. 2-1. Now, here comes the Bayern captain, Philipp Lahm. Oh, he's missed it! Unbelievable! And it stays 2-1. It's the centre-back, Sergio Ramos. Oh, miles over! Oh, that could be a critical miss. And that means that Bastian Schweinsteiger could win it for Bayern. If he scores, Bayern Munich are through to the final. What a pressure penalty for Bastian Schweinsteiger. He's done it! There's no place like home for Bayern. They will be the first team to contest a Champions League final at their own stadium.
It was an incredible moment, sparked wild celebrations from the Bayern players on the touchline. You could see how much it meant, as we heard from the commentary there, for them to compete in the final in their own stadium. Given the penalty takers, though, that Real Madrid had, I think Jose Mourinho still struggles to understand how, to this day, they didn't win the tie.
In three consecutive years, we reached semi-finals, and for different reasons, we didn't manage to reach the final. For me, the one that was really difficult was the one we lost on penalties again.
Chris, that's from your interview with Jose Mourinho about that 2012 semi-final. And I think he's completely within his rights. I mean, Ramos is now Real Madrid's penalty taker, you know, even to this day in 2020, that he can't believe that those three guys couldn't convert. And there's a brilliant close-up of him as well during that shootout where he just thinks, you know, this is just, if this is completely out of hand. These guys can't score it. It wasn't meant to be, maybe.
He started on his feet. He ended on his knees at the Bernabeu.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Watching it going on. Because when Bayern missed their two penalties in a row, the momentum had completely swung. And you never know, ifs, buts and maybes, but had Ramos not put it into orbit and scored, then you think that Real Madrid are probably favourites at that stage to go on and win it, given how the shootout had evolved. It was remarkable. After the game, Sergio Ramos said he was absolutely gutted. But he said, if I had the opportunity, I'd take it again. And we've seen subsequently how he's learned and Ronaldo has learned, because we think of them now as Champions League royalty, that they've never had a bad night in the competition. But actually, as we've just heard, in 2012, it was a devastating blow, Rob. You know, they hadn't been to the final for 10 years, Real Madrid. They'd seen Barcelona win it three times in that period. So for Mourinho and for Ramos and for Ronaldo to lose the way they did was completely heartbreaking.
It's also interesting because the Neuer saves from the Kaká and Ronaldo penalties were ridiculous. They were relatively in the corner, those kicks, but Neuer got there. He said, I chose the right corner twice, but in reality, you never know which side the opponent will aim for. And of course, you need a bit of luck. But I think it was at that point maybe where he was starting to establish himself as the best goalkeeper in the world, ahead of Iker Casillas as well. And let's not forget, for Mourinho, you know, a particularly painful night, as he was trying to become the first coach to win the Champions League with three different clubs as head coach.
We were so confident, and we had on the pitch the best penalty takers. We were ready for it. We started with the best penalty takers, thinking that they would make immediately the psychological difference. You start with Cristiano Ronaldo, he's a goal for sure, was not. You go with Kaká, and the second penalty, for sure we score, we didn't. And then we go with Sergio Ramos, for sure we score, and he didn't. And was a big disappointment.
Yeah, and I think you can still hear the pain in his voice, Robert. And only this month he gave an interview to the Spanish newspaper Marca when he admitted that he cried after this game in the car on the way home. Such was his emotion after this evening. And I think it is important to note that this was his second campaign. Before he arrived, they had been knocked out in six straight round of 16 ties, Real Madrid, which for a club of their size was not deemed good enough. And Mourinho, the year before, had lost in the semi-final to Barcelona, and then he lost in this one, and subsequently a third as well. So in his opinion, and I certainly think there is a case to agree, absolutely, he sort of laid the building blocks for the success that they've had subsequently, because the last 16 was a major hurdle psychologically for Real Madrid. Mourinho burst through that one, but as we've heard, they couldn't quite get beyond the semi-finals, and three losses, of which this one was, I think, the most hard to take given how the penalty shootout evolved.
Yeah, it's a great point to make, Chris, because I think some people do forget that Mourinho was sort of the catalyst really for getting them back into the knockout stages, because there was a point where Real Madrid were not guaranteed to get beyond the round of 16, as you mentioned. Of course, Bayern would go on to reach the final, as we heard there. The likes of Alaba, Badstuber and Gustavo all suspended for the final, but Chelsea were missing more and arguably more important players, and ultimately won in Munich. We know how that one unfolded. But these two teams, Chris, would get their successes. 2013, of course, Bayern winning it at Wembley against Dortmund, and Real Madrid, well, 2014 was the moment where an unparalleled era of dominance, certainly in the Champions League era, took hold.
Yes, most definitely. We'd had a period where Barcelona were the best, let's be honest. They won the three trophies, as I mentioned, in the 10 years between 2002 and 2012. So you sense that these two clubs, they were probably going to win the Champions League at some stage. But I think the celebrations for Bayern at the end were huge. And I was watching it back, and if people do watch the rerun on UEFA.tv, Rob, quite a bold, because they'd had shirts made to commemorate the fact that they were going to be in a home final. And I always think of those things. It's like, what if they lose and someone discovers them? You've got to keep those under lock and key.
Well, I'm sure they had them for the final, for winning the final anyway. but they didn't ultimately, of course. Chelsea with their famous victory, their first ever European Cup win. But regardless, a brilliant semi-final, Chris. So between the two ties on UEFA.tv this week that they're completely rerunning, So we've got the Man United Juve tie that we've been talking about and Bayern Real Madrid. Which do you think is the better game?
That's a very, very difficult question, Rob. I think for the whole match, I would have to go for the Juve United game because it ebbed and flowed for the entirety. Whereas you had a fantastic start and a memorable end in the Real Madrid Bayern game, but actually the second half and extra time, most of the players were exhausted, and it was still gripping because of the nature of the game and the prize on offer. But I think as a complete match, I'd have to go with Juve against United.
I don't know. I think
you can disagree.
Because I was actually rewatching the 2012 semi-final. I think actually in terms of, I think there's an element of nostalgia that comes in as well, Chris. Like you look at those kits from the 90s. And it really brings you back to that era. The Real Madrid Bayern game doesn't actually feel that long. I mean, it's 8 years ago now, but it doesn't actually feel a million years ago. And I don't have the same nostalgia watching that game, but the pace of it, the quality, and actually looking at two groups of players who would ultimately go on to be perennial finalists and competing at that level. And I love a penalty shootout, so I might have to go for 2012. Look, let us know what you think as well, by the way, because we really want your thoughts on the show. At Champions League on Twitter, use the hashtag UCL Classics and let us know whether you think the 2012 or the 99 game, particularly after you've watched them over the coming days, which you think was better. Obviously, it's a shame we don't have the Champions League right now in live football, but this was a lot of fun actually looking back at these old games. And Chris, we're going to be doing a few more shows of these. So what have we got that we're going to be looking at next week?
Yeah, two more classics, both of which you can watch on UEFA.TV as well. It's going to be PSV against AC Milan from 2005. I think almost a forgotten semi-final because what happened in the final when Milan won and went on to play Liverpool in Istanbul, of course. And then on Wednesday next week, it is Roma against Liverpool, the second leg of that tie from 2018.
Yeah.
Which was a bonkers night. That was like Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool at their most entertaining, thrilling, and probably for him, maddening.
Yeah, I think I like that team more than the team that is winning everything now. They were so fun to watch. And even in that first leg when they were well ahead and then let Roma back into it. But we'll save all that for next week. Chris, a quick reminder, how can people watch the two amazing games this week in full on UEFA.TV?
Very easily, Rob. You just have to go to UEFA.TV or download the UEFA TV app on the Apple and Play stores and simply log in or register. The 12th of May, Tuesday, you can watch the game we've just been talking about, Real Madrid against Bayern from 5 p.m. CET. And then on Wednesday the 13th, it's that 1999 classic between Juventus against Manchester United again from 5 p.m. Central European time.
Okay, we'll be back next week to preview two more Champions League classics. But for now, from Chris Parrott and myself, Rob Daly, it's goodbye.